Brexit negotiations turning nasty.
This is London Calling.
Theresa May says she's prepared to negotiate hard. Now, I don't know how, because usually in a negotiation, the person who gets the best deal is the person who can walk away. We've got no bargaining chip because we've already said we're leaving whatever. So it's not like, if you don't give us what we want, we're going to leave. No, we're going to leave. Our Prime Minister, Theresa Mayhem, keeps telling us she's going to negotiate hard. Or what? And really, the press are weak. The press need to challenge her on that and say, what does that mean, negotiate hard? What's the leverage here in the negotiation that we've got? I don't see we've got any. What are we going to do if we don't get a great deal? Stay? We can't do that. There's a mandate from the people after a referendum, and it's been talked about in Parliament and voted on in Parliament. We're leaving whatever. We'll have to take the deal that the EU say we're going to get. The EU are calling all the shots. They'll tell us what the deal is. We'll have no negotiating position at all. They will fix the price, and if we want out, we will have to pay it. There is no negotiation here. It's a fixed price exit. The figure that's being thrown around is £50 billion to get out. But it'll be whatever price they set. Whatever price they set, we will have to pay. This word negotiation is being bandied around as if we're actually going to talk about this and come up with a deal. We can't. We want out. We'll have to pay whatever price the sellers of out fix. If she's got some bargaining chip up her sleeve, she needs to say what it is. Otherwise, we're in trouble. Now, it's getting really nasty. A senior Conservative MP has urged the government to tactfully remind European officials that the UK helped Germany waive half of its war debt in the 1950s. This bloke's name is Bill Cash. You couldn't make that up. He's the chair of the European Scrutiny Committee. So this isn't just some backbench MP. This is a guy involved. He said it would be a useful point to make given, and I quote, Germany's extremely dominant role in the European Union, and insisted that we really don't owe anything to the European Union. He's dared to bring it up.
Don't mention the war. I mentioned it once, but I think I got away with it all right.
The deal was, look, you've surrendered now and it's all over and we have peace. You know what, all that debt, let's just cut it in half. You can't go back on that deal. That's a deal. It's an old deal. You can't bring that up when you're talking about a new deal. That's just dirty, isn't it? I just hope Germany don't come back and give us the bill for the damage that the RAF did to Berlin, Dresden and Hamburg. I'm Graham Mack, and it's springtime in Britain, so the countryside is filled with the sounds of nature and our favourite birds. America's national bird is the bald eagle. France has the Gallic rooster, and Britain has the robin. Bonzi's on the line. How are you going, Bonzi?
I'm very well, thank you. I just thought I'd let you know.
Yes.
One of my great pleasures this weekend, I've trained a little robin.
Right.
To eat out of my hand.
No.
And it now eats out of the granddaughter's hand. Tegan feeding the robin in the garden the weekend. Out of her hand.
How did you do that with a wild bird?
Because they can't resist mealworms. Live mealworms.
Yeah.
And they're wriggling about in their hand, and they see this wriggling, and they just come. Friendly as anything is.
Where did you get a mealworm from?
Any pet shop. I feed them to my geckos.
I see, right.
But so any pet shop, and they cost about £2.70 for a tub.
Right.
And the robins just love them. You can literally have them eating out your hand.
And you've got no problem with the poor mealworms?
No. They're just like, they're live bait anyway. They're going to change into blinking great spiders or flies, whatever they are in the end. But,
right, I see, yeah, right. Yeah, yeah.
They
see.
Cannot resist them.
Well, that's a great little tip. Bonzi, well done.
Well, we've done this last year with a different robin. And I know it's a different robin because that was ringed. This one isn't ringed. We've done it last year with a different robin as well.
Wow. Whereabouts is this all happening, Bonzi?
Oh, it's in Chewing,
In Chewing.
The bird man is Chewing.
Our future king is taking us for a ride. Workshy William. He missed a Commonwealth Day service because he's off skiing and boozing on a lad's trip to France. Now, it was lads only if you don't count the Australian model he was drinking Jaeger bombs with. Meanwhile, where's old Duchess Doolittle? She's at home with the kids. And she's just as bad as him for being work shy. She doesn't do much either. Prince William was the only major royal who wasn't at Westminster Abbey for this service. Now it's come to light that so far this year, work shy William has only spent 13 days on royal duties. Now, by comparison, the Queen has done 24 days. That's still not much. A quarter of the year gone. And the Queen has only done 24 days of official engagements. But Prince William, I mean, she's 90 years old. She's managed 24. And don't give me that nonsense about him being a air ambulance pilot. He does 80 hours a month. Most people would do that in 2 weeks. 80 hours a month, that's all he's done. So that's not a job, that's a hobby. Prince William, listen. If we're going to pay for you to live a life of obscene opulence, and we're going to make you our head of state one day, just for being born, the least you can do is show up for stuff. Mark's on the phone.
You're talking about a brush with wildlife.
Yes.
Right. I was driving between Walken and Bennington last year sometime.
Yeah.
And the vehicle in front of me clipped a buzzard that leapt out of the bushes.
Oh.
So I picked it up, wrapped it in my jacket, so that I covered it all over, and drove it to the vets. While I was driving it to the vets, it was trying to rip my hand apart.
Okay.
So I believe there was nothing wrong with it, but I took it to the vets and they checked it out.
Yeah.
They then come out and said, no, it's absolutely fine. It was just stunned.
Yeah.
So I actually said to them, would you like me to take it back to where I found it, as I was going back that way anyway?
Yeah.
So I actually released it back into the wild, and it was amazing the way it took off.
Wow, what a great feeling.
We opened the door to its cage. Yeah. They gave us a cage to take it back in.
Yeah.
Opened the cage door and it literally sat down onto its back legs and just jumped, and within seconds it was gone.
Wow.
The amount of power is that you could just see it lifting off.
Oh, wow, how special. Giving
that
him
was
his
phenomenal.
Freedom.
I actually got it on video as well.
Oh, did you? How cool. Hey, thanks for sharing, Mark.
That's all right, Graham.
Another embarrassment for Theresa Mayhem. So the Chancellor of the Exchequer, the man in charge of the money, announces he's going to raise more tax by increasing the tax, well, part of it, national insurance. It's just a tax by any other name. All goes the same place. In fact, national insurance doesn't even cover the amount. The amount we make in national insurance doesn't cover the amount we need for pensions and the NHS. Not even close. So he announces he's going to pick on the self-employed, the hardest working people in this country, the people who take fewer holidays and fewer sick days, the entrepreneurs, the small businessmen. All large business started out as a small business. The Ford Motor Company started with Henry Ford and a dream. The same with all other businesses. Small business, the self-employed, are the only people that can create growth. Governments can't do it. Governments cannot create growth. Yeah, they can employ more people, but that costs us more in tax. Business can employ more people as it grows, and they pay more tax. The Conservatives in the run-up to the election promised no increases in tax. So he brings in this increase last week in his budget, and our Prime Minister, the unelected Theresa May, she stands by him. She backs the increases. Then there's a backlash, and in classic Theresa May style, they do a complete U-turn. And the Chancellor, Philip Hammond, hasn't made it easy for himself. This is what he said in the Commons when he announced the U-turn.
I have decided not to proceed with the Class 4 NICS measures set out in the budget. There will be no increases in national insurance contribution rates in this Parliament.
In it, he says that he's still pledging a fairer tax system for the people who are employed and then the people who are self-employed. Like, at the moment, it's not fair and the self-employed are getting all the advantages. Like I said, the self-employed take fewer holidays and fewer sick days. They don't get all the benefits of being employed. It is fair. That's why they get paid a little bit more. And he's trying to take that off them. So he's still not letting them off the hook, even though there's this U-turn. This government is all over the place. And it starts at the top with the Prime Minister, Theresa Mayhem. She's not a great leader. She's a reactionary. On Europe, she was pro-Remain. Then we had a referendum. And overnight, she became pro-Brexit. She supported tax rises for the self-employed. There's a backlash. Now she's done another U-turn. The Conservatives are weak. They have a weak leader. You never know where you are with this government. But the good thing is, if you don't like a new government policy, wait a few days. I'm Graham Mack, and am I about to inherit $14.1 billion US dollars? I got this email on Friday saying some bazillionaire oil tycoon had passed away in America, and he was leaving all his money to me. And it's supposed to be from a lawyer, and it's supposed to be in America. Now, I doubt that he's a lawyer. I doubt he's even in America. These things are normally from Africa, and they use some kind of proxy number, so it looks like you're calling America, and you're not. Anyway, I called him, and we had a bit of a chat, and I told him to call me back, and he did. So I'm going to return his call now, and it's ringing.
Hello,
Fours. It's Graham Mack again. How are you going?
I'm all right. You asked me to call you, and I did.
Yes, I got your message. Mate, I was out shopping. If I'm going to get this money, I have had the best weekend. I've been living it up. I've bought so much stuff. In fact, I've bought a new car. You want to see it? What is it? It's a Lambretta, a Lambada. What is it? It's a Lamborghini. The bloke, I still got to pay the money on it, but I signed all the paperwork. So I've got, now, when I spoke to you on Friday, you said I had to email you to get this money because you're sure this is genuine? There's a billionaire in America and he's died and he's left me a chunk of money.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's great news because I've already started spending, my friend. Now, you said I had to email you. I'm going to do better than that, mate. I've got the money. Oh. I'm going to fly to America. I'm going to meet up with you and I'll sign whatever paperwork you need in person. I'm going to fly first class. So what I need is your address.
Okay, you know what to do for me right now? Email me right here.
No, give me the address. Okay. You give me the address. I will get on the next flight. I'm going to drive to Heathrow in my Lamborghini right now, and I will see you in 8 hours or however long it takes. Where are you? Whereabouts are you?
Okay,
in what state?
Listen to me.
Yes.
Before the money can be transferred to you.
Yes.
You have to first pay a consultation fee.
No problem. I'll bring my bank card. I'll bring the money. No problem. So where do I go to?
Can you just listen to me?
Yes.
Okay. Because before the money can be transferred to you, you have to email the financial agency, okay?
Yeah, I'll do all that when I get there. It will be face-to-face. It's better than email. You'll know it's me. I can sign it. We're all set. What's your address?
You know, listen.
I'll put you up in my hotel. I'll get you your own suite. Mate, I'm rich. I'll do whatever I can to help you. So whereabouts do I go?
Okay, you know what? This is late night right here. Can you call me back?
No, I can be there in the morning. I'll be there when you wake up. I'll get on a plane right now. Give me your address.
No, you mean you want to fly right now?
Right now, I'll drive to Heathrow Airport and I'll tell them, give me the first class. I want a first class ticket. I'll go there now. I'm rich, my friend. I can do whatever I like. Give me your address.
Are you sure you want to get involved in this?
I'm absolutely certain. Where do I meet you?
I'm in Washington.
Yes, great.
But before you leave,
I want to know the address. Fours, can you hear me? Your phone's gone a
before
little.
You leave UK, you have to get some document in your email.
I don't need to email.
What?
I'll be there. I can sign whatever you like. I'll bring all my bank details with me. I'll bring everything with me in my briefcase. I bought a brand new briefcase. You want to see it?
Okay, let me just get up right now, and I'll call you back in 2 minutes.
No, I just need your address, and I'll come and see you in person. You no need to call me back. I'll see you when you wake up. You give me your address, you go to sleep, you wake up, and I'll be there.
Okay, you know what?
Fours, where are you? What's your address?
I'm in Washington.
Yeah, well, give me the what? What's the number of the house?
Listen.
What street are you in? Are you in Washington State or Washington, D.C.?
It's Washington, D.C. Listen
Washington, D.C. You're in Washington, D.C. Okay, well, that's only like 8 hours away from here. We got flights direct to Washington from London every few hours. It's perfect.
Okay, you know what to do for me right now?
Okay, so what street are you in? You're in Washington, D.C., I got that. What street are you in now?
Listen, please.
I am listening.
Okay.
Force, what's the problem? Don't you want to see me?
Hello?
I'll bring you a lovely gift. They've got a great... The shopping at Heathrow is excellent these days. I can get you something really nice. And duty-free as well. What do you drink? Hello? Fuzz?
Please hang up.
Fuzz? Hello? Ah, well, maybe I'm not going to get $14.1 billion. Let's cross now live to someone who I know is actually in Washington, D.C. It's Victoria Jones. She's the Chief White House Correspondent with D.C.-based Talk Media News. Her insight and analysis are made available to over 400 news talk radio stations around the USA and around the world. She's originally from my hometown of Liverpool and moved out to the United States to pursue a career in talk radio because in Britain, commercial talk radio has really struggled. We've got a talk sports station, but besides that, there are really only two commercial talk radio stations, and they're national. There are no local commercial talk radio stations at all anywhere in Britain. They've tried to launch a couple of them and they've failed. They tried in Edinburgh once, and of all places, Liverpool, where people love to talk. But it didn't work out there.
Why do you think that is?
Well, first of all, they didn't give it long enough. Really didn't. They wanted to turn it around in like 12 months or something. And an ownership changed along the way. And the owners saw that it was expensive. And I don't think they were prepared to put the investment in. But yeah, City Talk now is, it's still called City Talk, but it's a music station. And yeah, it talk radio, commercial talk radio, I remember in Australia as being very vibrant, very opinionated. In this country, talk was always the BBC. People think Radio 4 is a talk radio station, when in fact BBC Radio 4 is a speech radio station. Which is
it's intelligent speech. I listen to it.
And so was it the talk radio scene there was the main driver, or was it just America?
No, it was talk radio.
It was talk radio. It just happened to be in America. That just happened to be where it was.
Yeah, yeah. If I'd been in Mauritius, it would have been talk radio. No, it was talk radio. It was that. Yeah, I can do this. I can do this better than him, and this is what I want to do.
And what was it you decided you could do better than him? What specifically?
Well, I knew that I was intelligent, opinionated, and witty.
Yeah.
And that I could become knowledgeable about a subject quick.
Yeah. And you've got that curiosity too. Yeah.
And I'm curious. Yeah. So, and I thought, well, I can do this. Now, what I did not anticipate was that there would be prejudice against me because of my accent or my nationality.
What form did that prejudice take?
You don't have the right to speak. You don't have the right to an opinion. I had that. You don't have the right to an opinion. Go back where you came from.
A nation built on immigrants, and still a nation run in a lot of ways by immigrants.
Go back where you came from. You don't have the right to an opinion.
And how did you deal with that?
Well, it would depend on the particular call.
Right.
And on
so this oh so this is not your peers in the business. This is the on-air callers.
This is callers.
Right. And how did you deal with them then?
Depend on the caller, and it would depend on where it was in the show and how the show was going. So I would gauge how I should play it and how many other calls I had waiting on the line, and whether I was looking for sympathy or whether I was looking to have an argument with them.
Right, right.
So I might go for pity.
Yeah.
Or I might go for a good argument.
Okay. Right.
So but very often it's good to go for sympathy from the following callers.
Yes. You put a caller on who yeah, yeah, I know exactly how that works.
Just know that they're going to come out with that.
Yeah.
So they come out with that, and you act hurt.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you get five calls of people affirming your right, particularly the following callers who disagree with you, affirming your right to speak.
Yes.
This was before I became a citizen.
Right, I see. Right.
But that was even back then, before we had all this business about whether non-citizens should have the right to opinions or to do all these things.
Yeah. Yeah. So did you get that now, or is that just at the very beginning?
I don't get that now, really, because, well, I am a citizen, so you don't.
You've always got that one. Yeah. You've always got that ace to play. Yeah. So where was the first radio station then?
I started in Phoenix.
Okay. So that was quite weather-wise for a start. It would be very, very different. You'd been in London previously?
Yeah, I'd lived in London for years. I adored Phoenix. I think it's my spiritual home.
What is it about Phoenix?
I love the light. I love the smell. I love the colors. I love the height of the sky. I love the shimmering reflection of the sun. I love the dust. I love the culture. I love the Native American aspect. I love the closeness of the Mexican border. I love the fact that there are so many people from somewhere else. I actually prefer Tucson to Phoenix. But what I love about Phoenix is I love Camelback Mountain. I love Squaw Peak. I love the adobe architecture. I don't like some of the new architecture, but but I just loved it. And I drove there from Palm Desert in June, not knowing that it was that Phoenix was in the desert, actually.
Yeah.
And I got there on a Monday night in June, driving down Van Buren Boulevard and at sunset, and saw Camelback Mountain, and thought, I've come home.
Yeah.
It was stunning. Stunning.
So what were the main differences you found in broadcasting between the USA and other places you'd worked?
That's difficult to answer. I don't know. I think commercials, the way commercials work, laws regarding commercials, the license.
Is it freer in America? Is Britain overregulated?
I think it overregulates itself.
In what way?
In terms of one of the reasons I think talk radio has struggled is because it's not freewheeling enough.
Hmm.
It could be, because the way the British are in their conversations on the street, they're far, far more freewheeling than Americans. Americans are much more laced up.
Yeah.
Buttoned down than the British are.
Yeah. Yeah.
So why don't the British let rip on the radio?
Yeah, it is changing slightly. LBC is making some inroads in London, and it's recently gone national on DAB. But I know what you mean. I know what you mean, yeah.
I've never got that. I don't get that. There's a sense of decorum.
Yeah.
I understand. And there's nothing wrong with decorum. I'm all in favor of decorum. I believe in manners.
Yes.
Which is something that's gone out the window. Why don't people reply to texts?
Yes.
Why don't people reply to emails if the answer is no?
Yeah, why not? Yeah. And why don't people return phone calls anymore?
I don't know. And it seems, particularly if the answer is no,
yeah,
then it's silence. No, the answer is, I'm sorry, I can't do that.
Yeah, or I can't help you. Yeah,
I can't help you. That's the answer. Not bloody silence and hanging you out to dry. Why don't people do that?
Yeah.
When did that become acceptable?
Yeah, yeah.
It became acceptable within the last 5 years, I think.
Yeah, and it's a coward's way out too. Just have the guts just to go in and say no. Yeah.
Coward. It's particularly, I'm going to sound old now, but it's particularly noticeable among people under 35.
Yes.
But it's become acceptable with everybody.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And I get on the case of friends. I have a lot of friends of all ages. I have friends from about the age of, well, I have friends who are 18 who are like really good friends of mine up to the age of 70. And if a friend of mine of like 25 does that, I just write them an expletive laden text saying, you know, why the bleep haven't you replied? Do you think it's acceptable behavior not to reply to me?
Right.
You ever heard good manners?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I get a reply.
Yeah. Okay.
And they get, you know, because I've already sent them emails about it, and then they remember, oh yes, I'm supposed to reply.
Right. And what is the etiquette? What is the timing on the reply? How long have you got for a no reply? 24 hours?
Oh, I'll give you 48 hours.
Okay.
Because you might not know the answer.
Yes, you've got to find out. Okay. Yeah, yeah. But that's the other one, though. People don't say to get a reply that says, let me find out and I'll get back to you. What's so hard about that? It's perfectly acceptable. Do people think you're not supposed to do that? Yeah.
Do that, but I think I'm the only one who does it, so I think I might stop now.
Okay, so you're in Phoenix. How do you get to be the legend you are? How do you get to be so important? Do all the many things, which I haven't got time to list, that you've done, TV and radio and in Washington. How do you go from Phoenix to the big time?
Well, I go to Nashville first.
Yeah.
Then I go to Detroit.
And these are all talk radio stations?
Talk radio stations.
Similar formats,
yeah. Then I go to Boston.
Right. So now we're starting to... Now, Boston, a very liberal town, and most talk radio stations I've noticed in America, very conservative. So how do... What do you do?
WRKO, very conservative station.
Okay. In Boston. Right. Yeah.
Conservative station and Irish.
Right. Of course. Yeah.
Got a lot of flack in Boston.
Your Liverpool background didn't help.
It did when I started to tell people, and also when I told people, hey, I've got a lot of Welsh in me.
Right. Yeah.
Don't be on my case.
Yeah.
So that helped. But and if you made your case about why you're not this, that, or the other one, but if people just heard the voice,
yeah,
there were assumptions made.
Okay.
So it was initially difficult in Boston, actually.
What assumptions were made?
I was a bloody English.
Oh, I see. So, and that was because of the Irish heritage there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So all this time moving around, did you have a partner then?
No.
Right. So you had the freedom to just go for it. If the right job came up, you just went.
Yes.
Right. Has that changed along the way?
What?
That you're not still single?
Oh, I'm still single. I mean, you know, you meet people.
Yeah.
But it's very difficult in this business.
Yeah. And especially with the moving around. Yeah.
Around, I mean, the cats will go.
Yes, you know. Good for them. Good for them. They've stayed with you. They're sticking this out. They're in for the long run.
They're in for the long run.
So then, how do you get to Washington then? Eventually,
well, I went from Boston to Washington. I was there for the OJ trial. I did some very interesting work during the OJ trial.
Wow.
I had my own jury.
Yeah.
Of listeners. Who followed the trial very closely, and I had them on the air. I had individual jurors on the air, and then I had the jury in, and they deliberated live on the air with a law professor as the judge. They deliberated live on the air when the real jury was deliberating. It was fascinating. It was so exciting.
Yeah.
And then we had our verdict.
And what was the verdict?
See, that's what everybody asks. The verdict was... not guilty, but he did it.
Which pretty much is how it turned out.
Yes. Yeah, they said not guilty, but he did it.
And how? Where did they get not? What was the thing that
they felt that the prosecution just hadn't proved it.
Mm-hmm. Beyond reasonable doubt. Yeah, which is all they have to do.
Yeah. And they were much more freewheeling, and of course they were not denied access to the television.
Right.
Not denied access to the National Enquirer or to Geraldo, who did sterling work.
Yeah.
During that trial. Geraldo really did great work during that trial.
Yeah.
Whatever people think of Geraldo, he did some really groundbreaking work in terms of getting information out during that. And they had all that information and they still said not guilty.
Yeah.
So it is that. Then I was syndicated. Then I came back to Washington.
Yeah.
And then I stopped doing talk radio and started doing coverage of talk radio as a sort of broadcaster who does hits as somebody who goes into radio shows and reports to the talk show hosts on what the news is.
Right. And that's why now you're on over 400 radio stations.
Yes.
Doing that. So of all the people when you were doing daily shows that you interviewed,
mm-hmm.
if you had to pick one as the most interesting, who was it?
One person is the most interesting interview. It's a tough call, really. Very tough call. And obviously I'm blanking. But I think James Earl Ray was really riveting.
And why?
Because he was scheduled for a 10-minute interview. And one of the weird things was that he came on and from prison, and he just stayed on for an hour. And I had read his book, and I just kept asking him questions. I had a full bank of calls. I didn't take any of the calls because I just had so many questions. He just answered all my questions. I won an AP award for this. He just kept answering all my questions.
Did that surprise you?
Yeah. I think it surprised everybody. And he was talking about Raoul and all these other things, all these other people involved. I don't know whether it was all, I think it was all, a lot of it must have been all rubbish, but it was just fascinating. And it was a Monday afternoon drive. And what was really creepy about this, as it turned out, was the reason he had phone access on that day was that it was a federal holiday.
Right.
Do you know what federal holiday it was?
Which one?
Martin Luther King Day.
Was it really? Wow. Yeah. That is spooky, isn't it?
Yeah.
And you think that had a bearing on why he was the way? Yeah.
But I just think it's way creepy.
Yeah. Yeah.
There were some very interesting interviews that I did during the, Chandra Levy in 2001. During the disappearance of Chandra Levy, I covered that extensively. I did some very interesting interviews during that when everybody thought it was Gary Condit, which, so I did some really interesting interviews there with peripheral people. I don't remember who all the peripheral people were, but I had a great producer. She got me the most extraordinary people, aunts and people like this. We did some great coverage there, and that was good.
So do you miss that, or do you prefer what you're doing now, which is, you know, the political commentary?
I like doing what I'm doing now a lot. It's really interesting. But you always miss talk show.
Yeah. Yeah.
Something about doing a talk show.
Yeah. So do you hope to go back and do that one day? You wouldn't have the time, though, would you?
You can't really combine the two.
Hmm.
Think you'd have to choose.
Yeah.
I think you'd have to choose. I don't know. I think it would be difficult. But I miss it. There's something energizing about it.
Mm-hmm.
In a way, I'm sure you find this.
Yes.
That nothing else energizes you.
Yeah.
Don't you find?
Absolutely. It is to be able to spend some time with fascinating people, even if it's only on the phone with them, is such a privilege. And you know that most people will only get to meet one or two of this kind of people in their lives. And you get to meet one or two of these kind of people every day. It is a wonderful way to earn a living. Let's talk about American politics now, because that's what you talk about with radio hosts all over America and all over the world daily. What are your opinions on the way that the US media handled the presidential race?
Oh, the presidential race, not the president now.
Well, we'll get to him. We'll get to him.
The race. Well, I think that they got suckered during the primary in particular by the reality show element of Donald Trump, and gave him so much coverage that, because they didn't take him seriously, that they helped him win the nomination.
Yeah. 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 What about his presidency? Some people do seem to think that maybe deep down he's a genius, and he's just putting on this show. What do you think?
I think that Steve Bannon is a brilliant strategist, is what I think.
Yeah. But Trump himself?
I think Trump has very fluid political opinions, that whatever political opinions he has, and I think that they're very shallow. And I think his knowledge of policy is astonishingly simplistic, very limited. And I think the one thing that he's very, I mean, if I was going to have a drink with Trump, which is never going to happen, I would ask him about building and construction, because I think he's extremely knowledgeable about that and very interesting. Anytime he starts talking about it, like when he starts talking about the wall, or the other day when he was talking about the bridge, the tunnels in Manhattan and all the tiles coming off, you can see his face get animated and his eyes light up, and he becomes very interesting and knowledgeable because it's a topic he knows about. It's the one topic he understands well. And I'd like to talk to him about that, because I like to talk to people about their expertise. Yeah. He doesn't know any of these topics. Bannon does. And Bannon has a deep strategy for what he wants to achieve. Now, if you put a strategist of a progressive bent in there with Trump, you would see Trump start to lean in a different direction.
Yeah.
I'm not saying he's a fool. I'm saying that he reflects, if you like, I think, the people, and most people will say this, the people who know him, the people he has last spoken with.
Right, yeah. I think we found that with Theresa May when she visited Donald Trump.
Did you see how they have apparently delayed the state visit to October?
Which is a genius move, because Parliament won't be sitting in October, so it removes the embarrassment of does he or doesn't he address Parliament. And also the Queen will be in Balmoral, which means the security risk of him in central London going to Buckingham Palace is removed as well. It is quite a genius move, whoever made that decision to move it.
Well, I shouldn't think that the White House made that decision.
Right. Right.
I shouldn't think so, because from everything that I have heard, he is not interested particularly in the Parliament aspect. He's very interested in having his pictures taken with the royal family.
Yes.
And with lots of glitz and gold.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it looks like that'll happen at Balmoral now rather than Buckingham Palace, which I'm sure they can spin because his mother was Scottish, so they can say he would prefer it there. I'm sure that's how that'll all go.
He'll inspect a golf course while he's up there.
Maybe. What's the most shocking thing he's done so far for you, then, in the short time he's been in? Done or said?
Oh, said. I mean, it's daily. I think the travel ban, while it was not shocking in the sense that he said he was going to do it, was shocking in its rollout, in how appallingly badly it, the ban itself was shocking, but how appallingly it was done was absolutely appalling. It's just too, and some of the things that you hear the Border Patrol were doing to people was just outrageous, forcing people to sign away their rights to their visas. These things are just, you know, that is appalling. So that is something that is quite shocking to me. And I hold him responsible because he did that. So that's something that I think is quite shocking. What else is shocking to me? I think, what has he said that's particularly, it so much runs together. Well, I think it was very shocking to me when he said on Tuesday that they, and then he managed to make it a really about himself rather than about Special Warrant Officer Ryan Owens at the address. But when he was lauding Special Warrant Officer Ryan Owens, who was killed in the botched raid in Yemen, but when he said earlier in the day that they were responsible for Owen's death.
Yeah.
The generals. Whereas every other president has said that the buck stops here and has taken responsibility for their decisions. Now, Trump gave the order for this over dinner. He was eating dinner. He wasn't even in the Situation Room. He was eating dinner with senior aides and he didn't follow the raid from the Situation Room. But he, so to blame your generals and then say, well, they're the best generals, but they wanted it, they did it, It was, they did it. And then that is astonishing for a commander-in-chief to do, and you can be sure that the generals noted it.
Yeah. So what's your biggest fear about a Trump presidency for the next 3 and a bit years?
I don't have fears like that. I mean, I'm covering the president. I'm covering the president.
Right.
So that's all I can do. I mean, you know, I don't have a fear. I just try to keep my head down and do it.
Do you cover British politics as well? Do you keep up with what's going on here?
Well, I watch Jonathan Pye.
Okay. And what are your views on Brexit?
I'm intrigued as to know, and I don't know how closely they are investigating this, as to whether the Russians did interfere with the vote.
With the Brexit vote?
I've read several times now that there are rumors that the Russians interfered with it, and that Labour wants that investigated.
Okay. How credible do you think that is then, that the Russians, because I've got to say, that's the first I've heard of the Russians being accused of manipulating the Brexit vote.
I've heard that a few times. That wouldn't surprise me in the slightest.
Yeah.
Well, particularly once you read Christopher Steele's Dirty Dossier, and look at, even though it's raw intel, so you know some of it's wrong, but once you read that 35-page Dirty Dossier and look at the extent that the Russians are trying to manipulate politicians, including, by the way, Jill Stein's name is mentioned in there.
Mm-hmm.
Green Party candidate, she is mentioned as having received money
directly from Russia. Well, the Greens are very, very left of centre. More left of centre than Labour in this country. And I don't think a lot of people realise that.
Yeah.
The Greens.
So that's not been talked about, but she is mentioned along with Trump.
Yeah, okay. That's very interesting. That is very interesting. What is the feeling in Washington about Brexit?
I think among the foreign policy establishment, the feeling is that it was that the Britain gave away power.
Gave away power to Europe when they joined, or gave away power when they decided to leave? Because that's the opposite of the feeling on this side of the Atlantic. The people who voted for Brexit thought they were voting for more British power.
Yes. Thought they were voting for more British power, I know. But the feeling is in the foreign policy establishment that there was more power being part of a bigger organization and being won than going it alone. That's the feeling. Whether it's the case, we'll only know that in a few years' time.
I wonder if that's because America is a collection of states that Abraham Lincoln managed to keep together after the Civil War, and made them such a great nation. And if you compare it with, say, South America, where it is a collection of small countries who individually have not been as successful as the United States, I wonder if it's because of the heritage and the history that Americans are brought up on. Because here, people are scared of a federal Europe. And they just didn't want... I wonder if that's why.
I think when you look at the overregulation in Europe, that's a real concern. I think that the overregulation in Europe has been damaging. And, I've heard stories about people with, you know, if you own a small plane, the kind of hoops and red tape that you have to go through just to keep your small plane running and up in the air coming from Brussels is ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And that kind of thing is going to turn you against something that might be beneficial in terms of collective security.
Yeah. Yeah. It wasn't perfect, but I think overall it was a good idea. But hey, we're going for Brexit, and it looks like we're going for a hard Brexit now, which already Tony Blair and John Major, ex-prime ministers, have already said it's a bad idea. Well, so many experts have said it's a bad idea. We'll just have to wait and see. Victoria, we are quickly running out of time. You're a sought-after multimedia journalist, commentator and personality. What's next for you?
What's next for me? Well, I'm loving what I'm doing. It's very hard to think ahead right now because, and I'll tell you this about the White House press area where we are, and I'm based in the basement right now. People are working 12, 16-hour days since Trump has come in.
Yeah.
We are all so exhausted that beyond thinking about the next triple espresso to keep ourselves going, nobody is even thinking about taking on anything else because we are just like, okay, so the next news cycles were 24 hours, then they became 12 hours. The news cycle is 6 hours now.
Yeah, yeah.
We don't know.
Yeah, yeah. I won't keep you any longer. Thank you so much for talking to me, Victoria. It's been a pleasure to talk to you. Where can we find out more about you?
Victoria Jones DC is my Twitter handle. Probably the best place to start.
Victoria Jones, once again, thank you so much. And we'll talk again, I'm sure. I hope so, anyway. Thank you. Well, that's it for this week. Next week, my guest is one of the founding members of the Sex Pistols, Glenn Matlock. I hope you can check back in for that. In the meantime, you can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Graham Mack. If you want to hear more Mac Nuggets, check out my website, macmedia.co.uk, and subscribe to my Bob FM show on iTunes. Got a question or something to say? Send me an email, put your phone number in the email, I might call you back. I might Skype you on the show if you leave your Skype details. My email address is graham@macmedia.co.uk, and you spell Graham like the cracker, Mac like the truck. Till next time. Ta-da.